The Consumer Price Index came out yesterday and it showed a higher rise of prices than most people were expecting. Consumer prices went up 1.9% in the past year. What in particular is concerning us, though, as it always does when we review these figures, is the impact that price rises are going to be having on people who can least afford price increases, so people on low wages, students, working families and so on. And it's those groups that any price rises, and particularly high price rises in areas like food and housing, those are the groups that we have most concern about when they go up.
Yeah, so part of the problem you're saying is that prices are going up but wages aren't. Why do you think wages are falling behind?
Well, there's a whole lot of reasons why wages aren't keeping up, and partly it's related to, you know, inequality in society. So one thing we know that for those who are doing very, very well, such as, you know, when Fonterra's CEO, Teo Spearing, had his big pay boost out a couple of weeks ago, it's in the millions of dollars. And I think if people, in the context of those big increases for the CEOs, if school support staff and tradies and clerical workers and others felt like they were getting ahead as well, people mightn't mind those big pay increases for people at the top as much. But when they're not, and when there's no particular plan from government to lift everyone's wages, that's when we get into problems, really, and that's when the impact of price rises are really starting to kick in for workers and students and others.
So the minimum wage needs to rise in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's the way, when we look at the price increases that came out yesterday, there's two things you can do to try and address that. One is looking at what you can do to limit price increases, and that's not a particular area we've got expertise in. But what we do obviously have an interest is in the other side of things, which is how you can also boost incomes to be able to accommodate rising prices. And there's obviously a role there for employers in terms of paying better wages. But we, particularly given the government formation at the moment, we think it's an urgent priority for an incoming government to have a real plan to boost incomes. And the sorts of things government can be doing in this regard is by lifting the minimum wage, by paying a living wage to people they employ themselves directly, by fixing employment law to establish really clear industry standards across different sectors of the economy to make sure workers are getting a fair return for their work. And the other thing they can do is get moving on pay equity, which will make a really big difference to low-paid working women, which we saw earlier this year with a big pay equity settlement for aged care and other care and support workers. Those sorts of things will make a big difference on their household budgets to afford price increases and be able to afford things like school lunches and doctor's trips and all the necessities that we need to get ahead.
Yeah, so, well, in the context of the election, and the minimum wage, what do you make of Labor's pledge to raise the minimum wage by 75 cents to $16.50? Is this enough?
Well, we were really heartened that if you look at the way the parliament we've elected, there's a majority in Parliament now who are committed to quite decent increases to the minimum wage. So the New Zealand First, Labor and Greens all have different policies on it, though their ones are much stronger than the National Party's and the ACT Party, who in recent times has wanted to abolish the minimum wage. But certainly, if you look at what Labor and the Greens are proposing, they're both wanting to get to an average of two-thirds of the minimum wage, of the average wage over time, which on the current figures would be around about $20 an hour. New Zealand First also want to shift it to $20 an hour over 3 years' time, and they've got a different way they want to pay for it through company tax cuts. So however way you cut it, there does seem to be more support now for a decent minimum wage increase.
And in the context of the living wage, what's that, $20.20 is it this year?
Yeah, at the moment it's $20.20, that's right.
Yeah. There's the sentiment that if a living wage is implemented or that minimum wages are raised high enough, employers will go out of business and employees will lose their jobs. What do you make of this sentiment?
We've looked at some of the evidence around the impact that minimum wage increases has on employment, and there's not a particularly strong correlation around major effects on employment for increasing the minimum wage. I mean, one of the reasons for that is that as you increase the incomes of workers and students and low-paid workers and others, they're likely to spend that in the economy, and so that is actually helping quite a few of the small businesses who are themselves probably paying relatively low wages anyway. So there's a churn effect in the economy which is helpful when you're lifting everyone's incomes. But there's other ways that we can address this to make sure that all businesses have got a, you know, got a plan in place, if, you know, phasing in increases over time. The living wage, for example, has an approach where accredited employers commit to either bringing in the living wage right away or having a dedicated plan to bring it in over time. So there's different ways we can do it to get to the end goal, which is to make sure that people have got decent income that they can, you know, afford to plan to save for university, to look after their kids and pay for lunches and so on.
Also, during the election, particularly from the Opportunities Party, we heard about the idea of a universal basic income and how the nature of work is changing and how people often having to work multiple jobs and aren't guaranteed employment, and then we've got increase in automation. So what do you think about a UBI?
We don't have a clear policy on it. But certainly the union movement is pretty keen on having a decent look at it, as I think an increasing number of people are. And you're right, you saw it feature in the election debate, courtesy of some parties who are promoting it. One of the reasons, I guess, why we think it is important to have that discussion, and there's some inevitability to an extent that we're going to move towards something like this in the future, whatever shape it takes, is for those exact reasons, really, that there's an increasing reliance on precarious work or gig economy jobs, where you might, rather than having a regular wage or salary, you'll be sort of taking piecework in a way, which is what people have done in agriculture in the past as well, doing, you know, getting piece rates for fruit picking and so on. But when that sort of employment approach spreads across the whole economy, then people's guaranteed income to be able to sustain themselves and their family is massively put at risk. And so having some sort of approach where the government is smoothing that out, we think is well worth looking into. The other thing that's worth having a look at is what some of the countries in particularly Northern Europe do. And they call it flexi-security, but it's basically, say you're a worker and you've been made redundant or lost your job through automation or changes brought on by climate change or whatever. They have a system which is a little bit like we do with ACC in New Zealand, where you're guaranteed a relatively high level of income for the first year, such as, say, 80% or 90% of what you used to earn. And some really active support to make sure you're mapping your skills, helping you find new work, looking up what other options might be out there. And being a bit more proactive on that sort of stuff, we're really keen to move towards as well, rather than the approach we have in New Zealand, which is you have a massive economic shock when you go from a wage job onto a benefit. If you've got kids, you're likely to lose the in-work tax credit, which is some support for working families. And those costs for kids don't go away if you lose your job. In fact, they increase. So fixing all that stuff up is really important too.
So what do you think about the idea of the government giving just parents a payment regardless of their economic situation?
Yeah, we support more universality in the form of income support payments rather than the high level of targeting. I mean, there's always going to be some extent of targeting, and working for families does that to a reasonably good degree in terms of identifying the incomes of the parents, the number of children in the household, those sorts of factors. But where it gets tricky is things like that in-work tax credit, which was $60 and it's now $72. And that's removed overnight if you go out of paid work. And, you know, those costs still exist for a family and a household when you're not only having the economic shock of losing your job and your income, but also if you're having that aspect taken away. We think it'd be much more sensible and more pro-children in a way, and making sure they've got access to their income through their parents' income to smooth that out and have a universal payment.
And back to the rising prices of goods and services, why do you think this is? Is it just because of inflation, or what other factors are coming in?
Yeah, there's lots of different reasons for food prices. I mean, in the case of a lot of fruit and vegetables, that's often quite weather dependent. In the case of some of the foods like the butter and the dairy products, they're commodities which we, you know, get a certain amount of money for when they're sold overseas, and there's not a particular, some countries do, but we don't have a sort of a dedicated amount for, price fixed for domestic consumers. So it really varies. I mean, and petrol as well. Petrol went up 4.5% over the last year, but people remember towards the end of last year it went right down again, and then it sort of shot up again. So a lot of those are quite variable based on stuff that's we can control in New Zealand, but quite a bit of it stuff that happens outside of the country which we don't particularly control. And so in a way, because of that variability, we're always keen to make sure we're looking after the income side of things properly, so that when those prices fluctuate a bit, people have got the household budgets to be able to properly cope.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, having a maximum price for fruit and veggies domestically. Would you support that idea?
We just don't have the expertise to say what that's going to look like. I mean, New Zealand has history around this in the 80s with a prices and a wages freeze. The only contemporary debate really that we're familiar with in recent times has been removing GST off fresh food, and other political parties have campaigned at the election on not just fresh food, i.e. fruit and vegetables, but also basic necessities in terms of dairy products, flour and so on. We're just not scored up enough to have a sense about how you can run the economy on those basis. So it's why we sort of put a bit more of our focus on how to support working families really through decent wages increases.